The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Icarus, the reality with Shane Jones.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and today for you guys, we're going to take it back over to the UK, because you guys know I love having people on the show from other countries, and we're going to dive into some of his personal experiences with the paranormal and high strangeness, and of course, at the end, we got to trickle in some local legends and folklore from over there in the UK, but I think you guys are definitely going to enjoy this conversation. Very organic, just kept rolling with it and seeing where it went, which honestly, those end up being some of the most fun shows sometimes, but before we get into the show, of course, we got to do the front of house and news and updates, so
just to give you guys some personal news and updates, I've been a week off of podcasting ever since Small Town Monster Fest. I just had some personal stuff I was dealing with, and as far as bizarre encounters goes, the first week we actually had a power outage on the day we recorded, second week going to Small Town Monster Fest, and the third week actually 4th of July, so we will be back at that one again, and same of course with Inquiries of Our Reality. I just need a little bit of time off in between, but I am back and ready to go with everybody, and as far as Small Town Monster Fest goes, it was a fantastic event, had a lot of fun, got to hang out with some friends, Oren of course, and Kevin from Where the Weird Ones Are, and Riley from Midwest Mythos, and actually got to meet Riley's wife, which was actually fantastic. She's a super awesome person. Actually met her before at another time, but actually got to talk and hang out with her for a bit. As far as the event goes, got to meet a lot of new people and actually got to meet a lot of old friends, like I mentioned. And I actually got connected with a few other people that will be popping on the show here soon. So I'm really excited for that. Really looking forward to the next event, which will be Squonkapalooza. And that will be the next one that I will be promoting. So, of course, that's the next piece of news and updates is Squonkapalooza will be August 10th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It is free for all ages, of course. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be games, food, vendors, crafts, goods, entertainers, artists, cosplay, contests, and more. And of course, I will be speaking at that event, so that one will be a lot of fun. So make sure you guys mark your calendars and don't forget to attend that one. And as far as front of house goes, if anyone has an encounter that they would like to report, you guys can report those to omm encounter reports@outlook.com. No matter how big, no matter how small, I definitely want to collect them and be able to hear about them and possibly read them on the show if you guys are okay with that. And if you guys enjoy this show, please don't forget to check out my other show, Bizarre Encounters, and our YouTube/Patreon show, Bizarre Inquiries. And for that one, of course, we always take in listener questions, so don't forget to submit those listener questions so we can get that one up and rolling again, of course, too. And if anybody wants to support the show, you guys can do so through the Patreon. Always updating and changing it over there, trying to figure out exactly what you guys need. I've had a big drop as far as Patreon members go, so hopefully we can build those numbers back up. And the second way is through the OMM merch store. Over there, I'll be dropping a bunch of new designs that I've been working on recently. I'll start dropping them off one by one, of course, on the merch store, so don't forget to go and check that out over there. And if you guys don't mind leaving a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify, I would definitely appreciate it. I love being able to read the 5-star reviews on the show, so if anybody leaves any of those, of course I will read it on the show and give you guys a big shout out. And to stay up to date on Inquiries of All Reality and Open Minds Media, you guys can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And every single thing that I mentioned is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, Medium Mark Hughes. How's it going today?
I'm doing absolutely great. Thank you, Shane. Yourself?
Not too bad, actually. Long day at work, but getting to sit down and have these awesome conversations always kind of is a nice little cherry on top for the end of the day, so I ain't complaining.
Well, that's good, because it's actually the beginning of the next day where I am, so it's even better.
Gotta always love the time zones. People don't really understand how off time zones are until you do something like run a podcast, and then it's like you're trying to set something up with people in the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and just the hours get ridiculous as soon as you start getting to the other side of the globe, so.
Yeah, but it makes it more interesting, I think. Yes.
That is true. So I guess before we start up with everything, for anybody that may not be familiar with who you are, what you do, what your work is exactly, why don't you let people know a little bit about yourself and a little bit about what you do?
Okay. My name is Mark Hughes. I'm actually a psychic medium. I'm also a podcaster. And my psychic medium work, I tend to do use oracle cards when I'm doing readings. I also do events. I run paranormal tours around certain haunted buildings, places like that. And I also sit down with one-to-one clients and give them hopefully a reading that'll help make a few decisions in their life, and messages that I sometimes get from loved ones and that sort of thing. As a podcaster, every Monday afternoon or Monday evening, I release a podcast under the banner of The Unexplained, and also True Crime. It's every Monday. It's available on all sorts of podcast platforms and YouTube. I'm just in the middle of writing one for next Monday, all about the stalking crimes and things like that. But I've also done things like poltergeist cases. I've done hauntings. I've also done UFOs and alien abduction cases and things like that. But I also try and do things like disasters or human disasters, you know, or medical disasters. And I did an episode on the rabies pandemic in the early 80s, things like that. So I try and cover a wide range of the darker side of life, I suppose you could say. But I sort of add my own little bit of humor to it, if it calls for it, of course.
You kind of have to when you start covering the dark topics. You got to just sprinkle not too much, but just a little bit of humor in there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You need to keep it a little bit light every now and then. So that's what I do on that. I'm also a ufologist as well. I study UFOs and that sort of thing. I talk to people, interview people who have what they call abductees or experiences, that sort of thing. And I'm also a great lover of the art of Wicca or pagan religion, things like that. So I tend to practice Wicca. Very much a country person, very much out in the greens and the trees and the countryside, that sort of thing. You could say I'm a witch in some respects, but that's a sort of a very brief background of who I am and what I do.
Man, I got a lot of stuff that I want to definitely dive into and ask you a bit about, but I guess a good spot to start, at least to kind of get a little bit of your background and story and everything, is where it all kind of started for you. Because I know you said you're a medium, and a lot of the time people will have that as like a lifelong thing, or they'll have paranormal things that'll happen to them as a kid that'll kind of lead into their interest. But like, where did it all kind of start for you to kind of lead up to the point that you're at now?
Yeah, well, I've always been interested in the paranormal. I'm 60 years old now. I'm retired. I was an illustrator, a freelance illustrator, but I've put all that away to concentrate and do what I enjoy doing now. But it all actually started when I was about 8 or 9 years old, and I used to live in a haunted house over in a small town over here in the UK called Bolton. And the town, and this was probably in the early 70s, and the early 70s in Bolton was pretty dark and miserable anyway. It was a very sort of tough time, I think, economically. And the house I lived in, it was a set of houses, about five or six houses in a row, and we lived right on the end one. And now, bedrooms in those days, certainly for kids or young teenagers, it simply was a bed and a wardrobe, and that was it. You know, you didn't have your games and your TVs that you get nowadays or anything like that. a bedroom was for sleeping in. That was it. That was the way it was always been. And what used to happen was I'd get ready for school in the morning, and I'd put my blazer on and my tie and what have you. Now, because I didn't have a mirror in my room or anything like that, I could use like the varnish finish on the wardrobe. It was like, I could see myself quite nicely, but it was a bit brown and what have you. But anyway, so I tidied myself up. And then one morning, we hadn't lived there all that long, a couple of weeks, month maybe. And I looked at my reflection and behind me was another figure actually reflective in the wardrobe. And I remember thinking, hello, that's, and I don't know what I thought it was at the time, but I just looked back and there was nothing there behind me. But I looked into the reflection and it was still there. So I sort of thought, hello, okay. So luckily it was a school day and I quickly rushed all my rest of my clothes and darted back downstairs. Anyway, this happened for quite a while, quite a few mornings. And I ended up getting really scared to look into the wardrobe. And one night, it sort of the activity, if you like, it sort of increased a little bit. And there was one night I went into bed, I got under my sheets, and all of a sudden I could feel my bed sheet being pulled away from me down. And I thought, this isn't right. So I pulled it back and I was really tugging against something. And then I felt somebody sit on the edge of my bed. You sort of feel that bulge sort of going under. And this again happened for quite a few nights. And the one night I got really brave. And I decided to have a look to see who this, what it was. And I sort of pulled my bed sheet down and looked very quickly in the corner. And on the end of my bed was this big, sort of rather large lady. She looked like a nurse or something like that, because she had like the hats and the bit of cardboard around the head sort of thing. And then I quickly dashed back under. And I spoke to my parents about it. Well, my dad was very much a working class man. As far as, as long as we had food in our bellies, roof over our head, he wasn't really that bothered about anything else. But my mother was very spiritual herself. And my mother listened, just said, well, don't worry about it. I'm sure it's nothing or whatever. I'm like, okay. Anyway, this went on for ages. I got really scared of going to bed. What I used to do was when I got myself undressed, I used to switch the light off and faster than the speed of light, dash straight under the bedclothes, covers, and hope I didn't see anything. Anyway, like I say, this went on for quite a while. One Christmas, it got to, it was Christmas Eve. And our next door neighbor asked all the neighbors around for a bit of a tipple. I was only about 9-10 years old, but I was old enough to go, And so all the neighbours were there, they're all having a jolly old drink and a chat while us children, about four or five of us, sort of sat on a settee with our lemonade and bag of crisps. And all of a sudden, the neighbour actually had two younger boys who were too young to stay downstairs. They were probably about five, something like that. And they were upstairs in bed already in their house. And while everybody's chatting away, all of a sudden we heard this almighty scream come from upstairs in their house. And one of the boys that was downstairs turned around and said, oh, I bet he can see that old lady in his room again. And everybody in the room suddenly stopped and all looked at each other. And it turned out we'd all seen this same lady that I'd seen on the end of my bed in their houses at some time or another. So this apparition had been moving from house to house, just checking in on people, that sort of thing. And when it was like talked about, we ended up like swapping notes, if you like, over time. Then the activity started to increase a lot more. And I used to have, my youngest sister at the time, she was only a baby. And my mum would go, and she was in a cot, her afternoon nap. And the amount of times my mum would put her down in her cot, go down, give her a half hour nap, go back up and find all that her toys, cubby bunny rabbits and teddy bears and what have you, had come out of the cot and they were put in a circle on the floor. And we used to think, well, how on earth have you done that? I mean, my sister was only a baby at the time, so she hasn't done it. And there was all sorts of other things starting to happen, not just in our house, but throughout the entire block, if you like, of terrace houses. We'd go down in the morning and find like a standard lamp had been moved from one corner of the room to the other. you know? And it just got really bizarre, the more and more things that happened. But at this stage, excuse me, I'm going to take a quick drink.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in. Just out of curiosity, too, did you ever figure out if there was like a hospital or maybe like a military camp or something like that here at some point?
Yes, we did. Like I said, I was only a kid, but somebody else did actually do some work. And I found out later that the row of houses used to be a care home for the elderly.
Mm.
Yeah. And right at the end of those terrace houses was a shop. I think it was like a co-op or a spa or something like that. And we found out that the people who ran that spa were too scared to go into their stock room because there was always something in there, you know. So it was really something going on within those houses. Anyway, I started to become less scared of it, if you like, when I started to understand what it was and all the rest. I started to get a little bit more involved in what on earth is it? You know, what is this sort of thing? And my mum used to take me to the library. This is back before the internet, so we had a thing called books, you know, like a tree with words, if you like. And we went there, and I started to read about all these ghost stories, but I never actually found them frightening. I just found them more interesting. And so that was me. I was into the ghosts and spirits and the hauntings and anything like that. I was really clued up on, I was really interested in. And then one day there was a television program that came on. You might be too young to remember it, but it's an American drama, science fiction drama. It was in the 70s. I think it was called something like The Fantastic Journey or something like that. And it was about a group of people that got stuck in the Bermuda Triangle. And every each episode, it was them trying to get into the right, what do you call it?
Like dimension or reality?
Dimension, that's it. That's the word I'm trying to think of. The right dimension, trying to get back home again. It only lasted about 10, 12 episodes. I believe it's actually on YouTube now. A bit grainy, but it's there. And I thought, well, what's the Bermuda Triangle? And again, I spoke to my mother, and she told me, and I thought, oh, well, I'll find out about that then. So back to the library, and I was reading all about Flight 19, the equinox that disappeared, all these various things that happened within this particular triangle of the sea. And I got more and more hooked in that. I was like the kid at school while everybody else was reading sort of, I don't know, Charles Dickens or Janet and John. I was the weird kid reading about death.
That's like a lot of us that seem to be in this area and field. We're the weird ones out there reading all the folklore and books about dark things as a kid.
And then it sort of went from there. And then as I got older, I learned more and more about like cryptids. I had experience with cryptids before they became popular. I remember there was one time I was a teenager, but I was still at school, and there used to be, I lived in a village, which is not far from where I am now. And next to this village was this big, you know, sort of acre woods, and it was called, Bluebell Woods, it was called. And everybody used to say it was haunted and things were going on in there. Of course, I thought, oh, I've got to find this out.
Of course.
Then one night, I got in trouble actually for my parents because it was a school night, but I decided I wanted to go down to Bluebell Woods when it was dark. So I took a big, in those days, it was like a bike torch, a great big metal thing, and I took a torch with me. And I went down into Bluebell Woods. I sat in the middle of these woods. Nobody would go with me, miseries. And I sat there, and all of a sudden I heard this baby crying. And I thought, oh, okay, baby crying? And the woods were literally out in the middle of nowhere. And I thought, well, there's no houses nearby and there's no sort of camps or gypsies or anything like that. So I thought, well, I'll find out where it's coming from. And I followed the noise. And as I followed the noise through the through the woods with my torch, all of a sudden the noise changed direction and it came from a different part of the forest. I thought, okay. Well, so I tried again, and every time I felt I was getting near to this noise, and it was getting louder, it would suddenly go faint again and come from a different part of the woods. Anyway, I sort of realised time was getting on, I ought to get home, and I got home and got a bit of a telling off of being out so late on a school night, but it wasn't until sort of much later, and when I was doing a bit more reading and research, that I may have come across what they call is a Tyanak, And a Tyanak is like a demon baby, if you like, that fakes a cry in order to trap you. And once it's got you, that's, you know, those days you go missing and people can't find you. And I did sort of think, oh my God, you know, I just about got away from that one then, you know?
It almost kind of sounds like a fae experience for like the same thing too. Cause usually with the fae, they'll try to lure you out and they'll use different noises, yeah. Baby crying. Like I would have went towards fae, but yeah, that's another one I've never even heard of before.
Yeah. Well, this is it. I found it out much later, but yes, it is that sort of thing, because it's meant to be like the liminal part of the forest, you know, the entrance and where it's meant to be most dangerous or that sort of thing. But that was like my first, I think, cryptid, if you like. I put that down to. And then as time went on, I met a girl, got married, had children, had a career. Kids all left and gone away and all live and have families of their own now. And then I retired and I thought, right, I'm going to get back into this paranormal. Paranormal was always there. I was always reading about it. But when you got family, it's very difficult to do, to try and really throw yourself into it. And I suddenly found out I had all this time. I had no more after-school clubs to worry about or anything like that. So I thought, right, let's get back into this. And then I met a friend of mine who is a medium, and she's a brilliant medium. And she actually offered to give me some training, you know, as a proper professional. I'd have to pay her, and she did. And I went. I spent about two weeks with her on a course, learning all about mediumship and how to focus and how to meditate, and all that sort of thing. And then, unfortunately, she got very good at what she does, and she just got too busy to carry on with the training. So I ended up going with another guy who's a very good friend of mine, who's actually a demonologist, and he taught me how to do things like remote viewing and how to do like out-of-body experiences and things like that. And he really went into detail, like in the next stage of being a medium, and he taught me how to read oracle cards, how to trust your instincts. And then he suddenly got very good at it, and although I still keep in touch with him, he just ran out of time. And then I had a final medium, again, who's a very good friend of mine, who actually taught me how to become a stand-up medium, picking up people from the audience, picking up spirits from the audience, picking up that, you know, so you stand, you've got a crowd of people with you, and then you learn how to pick out certain empathic or readings for people, that sort of thing. And she taught me how to do all that, and I've done a few gigs with her as well. And I sometimes go to venues and I do ghost tours and say what spirits I can pick up. And then with that, with all the training I've had, I've also, that's when I started to do it more as a, I think job's probably too strong a word. I don't look at it as a job. I just look at it as something I really enjoy doing, and I like
a passion.
People in that sort of respect. Yeah, exactly. You know, and also I feel it's the first job I've really done where I've not got sacked from. So I think, I must be doing something right. And, you know, so when people sort of say, Mark, that's fantastic, you know, I'd love to come back for another reading, or I think, oh, brilliant, I'm doing something right, and they're happy with what I'm giving them. So that's sort of like the how I got into mediumship. The podcast came about. It's something I'd always wanted to do. I listen to a lot of podcasts, especially about the unexplained and crime and the occasional music one. And there are some really good podcasts out there. And I thought, oh, I could do this one. I could just, you know, I know enough. I'm sure I could throw a show together. And it wasn't until I heard one, I won't say the name or anything like that, but it was awful. It was really bad. And I just thought, and I looked at their viewing, you know, the listening figure, it was like 1.5K. And I thought, really? I've learned nothing from this, you know? And then I sort of looked, I started looking for some others that was as bad. I know that sounds really not the right thing to say on a podcast, but I just suddenly realized if these people can get away with doing something really, really awful, in my opinion, well, that lower standard, I'm sure I could do better. And then at the same time, there was a friend of mine who runs a haunted museum, or a paranormal research center, as he calls it, and he offered me the opportunity to do a podcast for his his television station called Ghost Planet Network. And I thought, yeah, great, I'll go for it. So I ended up doing that. I just done my 100th show, and next week is my 104th. So that's why I've been doing it for 2 years, doing a podcast for 2 years. So,
well, that's awesome. That's, I'm glad that you stuck with it. A lot of people end up giving up after the first year or two, but I feel like once you get into about 2 years in, because I'm about 3 years in now, you get to a point where it just kind of becomes part of you, and it's just what you do, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, this is it. I mean, it's now, I also do it, one, because I enjoy it and I enjoy the research. When you retire, you sort of need your brain still. You need your brain to work for you. You know, I need a reason to get up in the morning. It's easy to say, ah, what the heck? But, you know, so that's, it's also given me motivation, if you like, to get up and actually do something a bit more practical and record it every week and, you know, so yeah. So and that sort of pretty much brings it to up to date. So where I am now.
And as far as stuff goes now, there's a couple different little facets of what you were just talking about that I kind of want to dive into. But you mentioned the fact that you practice Wiccan and that you're partly a witch, or some people would call you a witch. How exactly did that come to be? Like, how'd you exactly get into that stuff? And as far as that goes, well, also, a lot of people always ask, like, what exactly do you practice when it comes to that, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I do get asked, do I, you know, put bad spells on people and stir up frogs and stuff like that?
Well, I didn't mean it to that extent, but...
Well, it's funny, really, because I've always been a country person. I've always been into, like, the wildlife and things like that. I'm not the greatest gardener in the world, but I'm interested in seeing a garden grow, if that makes sense. I have an area in my own garden. I've got a great big long back garden, and right down the end of it, I've created a wild garden, you know, where everything has grown naturally and things like that. I put a little bench in there as well, and I meditate up there, because I am surrounded by countryside here, and I've always been into the countryside. And I found out that being a medium, it's all about energy. It's all about using your instincts and using the energies, like psychometry, when you touch something to try and see what you can read off it. And I realized that if I use the energy of a garden or something like that, if I regenerate or refresh myself by meditating within a garden, then I feel a lot better, because I've using the energy around me within that garden. So when I'm doing Wicca, if you like, I use it really for just energizing myself in order to carry on doing my spiritual work. And it's sort of, how can I put it? I'm a sort of jack of all trades, master of none. When I got into the Wicca, it helped me understand nature a lot better. And I was also able to use what I call runestones for doing readings as well. And I made my own runestones. I really enjoy doing that as well. So when I'm doing my Wicca, I mainly use it for energizing myself. And if I'm having a bit of a bad day, I try, or if I know someone who's having a bad day and they want some help, there are certain things I can do to get rid of the negative energy around them. And I use Wicca in order to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely. Because I was going to say, there's like a totally different like connotation of what Wiccan is as far as like in America versus like the UK. Like when you hear about it in the US, usually it's people that are like, it's usually thought of more as like a satanic thing when it gets brought up. Yeah. But of course, over in the UK, with your guys' history and background of everything, and it's a totally different thing. It's more, it seems like a natural spirituality versus like a bad intention type of spirituality, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, one of the phrases is blessed be, harm thee none, which basically means I'm using Wicca or pagan, but I don't intend to do any harm with it. It's tempting sometimes when I see some people, but I've never done anything like that. I mean, I've read about things like what do they call it, the pattern on the, you see on the floor in blood on the walls, the
sigils.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And that's, to me, that's sort of really Hollywood, you know. It's just them trying to frighten everyone. I do get double takes sometimes when I say I practice Wick, and I do have had people go, really? And they back off and they think, oh my God, you know, he's going to X me or something. But it's nothing like that. One of the things I do is when I've done a ghost tour, and it does take it out because spirits use your energy. One of the things I've found is I'll go up and I'll hug a tree. Now, I get a lot of funny looks, believe me. One guy actually came up to me and said, do you want to be left alone?
No, this is a male tree.
And you hug a tree and it literally revitalizes you. And it's amazing. It is a fantastic feeling. And it sees me usually for the rest of the evening, if you know, depending on how much time I'm with the clients. You know, it just gives you that extra vroom. So that's how I tend to use my Wicca. I tend to use it in a peaceful way.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
Yeah, because usually it's like when it comes to Wiccan, all of that kind of stuff, like there's like the light working side and then there's like the dark side of it, I guess, is a good way to describe it. And it seems like most people that are like mediums, they more so kind of work on the light side of the spectrum. And it seems like they kind of get into a lot of that kind of stuff too. But I always like to try to separate it on the show. That's why I usually kind of dive into the questions involving this kind of stuff, that there is a big difference between the light side and the dark side of it. But everybody just has that bad ambiance for all of it, not realizing that there is a difference. But I mean, also too, it seems like a lot of podcasts that are in this area too are very Christian based. So of course that's not going to be something in their wheelhouse to begin with. But as far as my show goes, I kind of like to entertain all different possibilities. So, you know, I don't avoid a topic just because, you know, one group doesn't necessarily like to talk about it. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I do have a friend of mine. He's, in fact, he was the guy who taught me how to do remote viewing and things like that. He studies demonology, and I've seen some incredible things happen when he's when he does deal with the darker side of the paranormal. As all right, he always looks knackered as well. Doesn't surprise me, but I've seen some fantastic stuff, some phenomenal stuff I've seen when he's dealt with the paranormal, when he's dealt with demonics and stuff like that. But he knows how to protect himself, and he's very good at it. And I always say to people, you know, if you're going to do something like that, make sure you know what you're doing first, you know, because it can really drain you. It really can. But yeah.
I mean, even doing some of the protection stuff too, you got to make sure you're getting it from the right source, because there are people that'll like tell you this is a source of protection and it won't actually be that at all too. Or sometimes if you don't necessarily do it properly, then you're not really helping the case. Like one mistake people always make with saging is the fact that you have to like make the trail leaving the house, whether you have like a window open, a door open, and most people just sage, but not leave a window or door open at the end of it that you trail it out to. So then they don't leave that trail for things to be able to leave, and don't realize you're supposed to do like a path around your house and stuff. So it's like, if you don't practice it correctly, then it's not actually doing what it's intended to do in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, I mean, people say to me, well, I mean, I've done saging around, it's mainly people who move just about to move into a new house. And I'm asked to do a clearance and a saging for, you know, they want to like start afresh. And I do saging for those. And some people said to me, do you walk around with the Bible and things like that? I said, no, not really. There is a certain spell, like you can say, but it's all down to the individual. There are mediums out there who will sage, and they'll be reading passages from the Bible in order to do it. But to me, I've just got a few words I've got written down. And I just say those as I'm going around, you know, just going around with the, I mean, I grow my own sage as well. So, you know, it's all done properly.
I mean, even within that sort too, that's another thing that people don't really think about, is that when you get really, really early in the Bible, like there's a lot of like mysticism and different things that would be like considered Wiccan or like pagan now. But again, it's all about how you use it. And what your intention is behind it. And again, if you actually look into a lot of the religions that are against a lot of this stuff, you realize that a lot of the base is in mysticism that kind of led it to where it is now.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny, I once knew of a person, I didn't really get that involved in it. I knew the guy who did. There was a family over here, I can't remember whereabouts it was now, they had some really bad poltergeist activity. And the guy who was helping them. He was a Cherokee Indian, you know? But, I mean, he didn't used to go around with the feathers and stuff, but you could tell he had that sort of tan skin, really dark, long hair, you know? Mm-hmm. He's sort of the modern-day Cherokee Indian or something like that. And he was going around there, and he could sense that this thing was really malevolent, and it was really giving the family a hard time. Anyway, he found out, I don't know the full story, but he found out what had happened was, it wasn't a poltergeist as such, it was some sort of entity that liked to just cause trouble. And what had happened was, there was one of the, I think it was a teenage daughter, who was interested in rituals and in the Cherokee way and things like that. And she was laying out these stones on the floor and saying these words. And he looked at her and he said, "Sorry, my love," he said, "you've got two stones the wrong way round." And they swapped the stones over, and it occurred to him, what she had done was, instead of doing what she was, her intention was, she'd actually, because the stones are the wrong way round, she'd actually let something in into the house.
Ooh, yeah, like pushed it the wrong way. Like it was reversed to come in instead of push out.
Yeah. So, after they realized, she was mortified, but after they realized what was happening and why it was happening, is that he helped her and they managed to clear the entity or whatever it was, which I found quite interesting. Because how can I put it? None of the family really knew what she was doing, but they all witnessed all that was going on. And she never told them that she was doing this daily ritual to try and get rid of this entity, you know. They only found out when he said, well, she was doing it wrong. And they were doing what wrong? Well, she was doing the stones the wrong way around, so she probably brought the reverse in as opposed to pushing something out. I mean, like I said, she was mortified, apparently, what she'd done. She read it wrong, but it got cleared up. It got cleared up, and as far as I know, it was everything worked out all right in the end. But
that almost makes you wonder too. People are always buying like different rocks and different things like that have symbols and everything on them, and they're decorating their house with them because they get them from like the decor store and all that kind of stuff. Makes you wonder how many people have bought something not realizing what the symbol or sigil on it actually meant, and ended up having weird activity happen, and it was just mass produced by some company that also had no idea what the symbol meant, but thought it just looked cool, you know.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. I always say, if you're going to get something like that, you're better off going to one of these holistic type shops. I used to know one called The Speaking Tree, and the guy in there, he was really knowledgeable about signs and symbols and stuff like that. And he used to get customers in there that used to sort of say, "Oh, I like that," and he said, "Yeah, but you can't hang that up in such and such, otherwise you're going to." So he really knew his stuff. So if you do a mass-produced commercial ornament or something, yeah, I suppose you'd have to be careful, because the staff probably wouldn't have much of an idea of what it was or what it meant, apart from it looks nice on the shelf. But if you go to like some of these proper shops where the owner really knows his stock, then that's probably the best way to do it. You know, it's like crystals and things like that. You know, I mean, I'm not very good at remembering. I know if I get a crystal, I know what it is and I know what it's supposed to do. But I'd probably go have a quick check up first. But some of these stuff are great. You know, they just know exactly what crystals, what it does and how it does it. You know, so I always think go to one of those type of shops rather than mass market.
Oh yeah, and it's supporting a local business in the process of it too is always an added bonus, of course. And
of course, yeah.
I definitely wanted to dive into, you mentioned the remote viewing stuff again, and people always have some fascinating experiences when they start diving into this stuff, especially when they actually start going to places that are not necessarily in this reality. I'm not sure if you've actually done any of that stuff, but I'd love to hear about your experiences with remote viewing.
Well, when I first did remote viewing, I'm going to sound big-headed, I don't mean to, but I actually found it easier than I thought I would. You know, I'd learn my meditation, I'd learn how to do that, and I'd learn how to sort of think outside of my body.
I think that's already half the battle, is just being able to meditate first, because that's like the starting process, because it's like a two-part process.
That's right, yeah. Hang on. Oh, it's been really warm over here today. So I'm drying up. And the first time I did it, I had to sat down and I got myself out, and the guy in front of me had a map, and he said to me, okay, I want you to turn left. And I said, okay, I'm turning left. What do you see? And I would tell him what I saw. And I took him all around this map, exactly what was where and everything. And I said to him, and he said, okay. He said, no, before you go, I said, there's a man with a dog. There's a man that I could see a man there, and he's walking his dog. And it was pissing with rain outside. And he said, well, no, that's it. This was done over Zoom. Sorry, I should have pointed that out. So it was over where he lived. I'd never been to his place before. And he said, well, it's pissing with rain outside. So there's definitely a man there with a dog. Anyway, he got his Mac on and whatever. He went out and he said, okay, Mark, there's the shop that you saw. And he literally took me round where I saw. And just as he'd finished, I said, hang on, look back. And he looked back, took his phone back, and there was the man with the dog. So straight away, I thought, oh, yeah, I could do this. do you know what I mean? So I even got to the point of the man with the dog. The hardest thing I had was I was given a set of locations, and I sat down, I started to zone out, and I went to this the locations they gave me, just gave me a set of, like, you know, map locations. And I said to him, I said, I can't get in the building. I can't get in the town. It is a big town. It's big walls. It's brick. And I explained, but I cannot get in the building. And he said, don't forget, like, it's remote viewing and all that. I said, okay, I just could not get into this building. No matter how hard I tried, I was being pushed out spiritually. And I came back and he said, I'm not surprised you couldn't get in. And I said, why? He said, it was the Vatican Library. So I couldn't, and I thought, after that, I thought, yeah, there's something to that. You know, if he'd give me, I mean, he gave me other coordinates and things like that, and I managed to, you know, I found out where certain, excuse me, there was, somebody wanted to go to a museum that had a real-life tank, and they asked me if I could find one, and I zoned out. And I said, yes, you want to go to the such and such military museum. And there it was. There was the tank. So they were well chuffed. They hadn't wasted their money. So I was asked to do that. I've never had to look for a missing person or anything like that. But yeah, that was probably the weirdest thing, is the fact I couldn't get in the Vatican. And that really sort of played on me, you know. There's a lot of weird things around the Vatican Library. There's a lot of spiritual stuff going on there. And I kept thinking, why couldn't I get into the Vatican? And no matter how many times I try, I just get pushed away. I don't know what it is. There's obviously something there that somebody's put something up and said, no, you can't come in.
Have you happened to try again, like, relatively recently to see if you could get into it? Just out of curiosity, because, of course, they probably have beyond what people can imagine hidden in that place. So, of course, it's spiritually protected. It's protected in every dimension of reality.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think I've tried for a while. I will try again. I probably will try again. I haven't tried for a while. I'm trying to think. Probably before Christmas when I tried again. Because every now and then, like, just to keep my brain active or practicing, I will have a go. But that was,
I wonder if you need, like, a tie to get in there. Like, I wonder if you would have to, like, think about a specific item that you want to almost bet is in there, and you have to, like, focus on that item, and I wonder if you could, like, somehow bypass it just to be able to be in that area with that specific item.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the film? With Tom Hanks. Oh, hang on. I've got the book. The Da Vinci Code.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because they go into the Vatican, don't they? And I could try that, I suppose. I'll try that at the moment. Yeah, yeah, I'll give it a go.
Dude, the Vatican, though, that's like its whole other thing. Like, I know a bunch of people have did that said Raid Area 51. They had all that stuff going, but yeah. Raid the Vatican if you really don't want to be able to uncover some secrets, because, you know, they talk about how there was supposedly, like, three great halls of records. It seems like one of them is more than likely underneath the Sphinx's foot, because the Egyptian government will let anybody explore anything, but for whatever reason, they won't let people explore that passage that's under that foot. And I feel like there was the Library of Alexandria, and either one of two things happened. Either one, that got burned down and everything got destroyed, or two, everything got moved out of it and got put into the Vatican, and then the building got destroyed. And if that's the case, then there's still another random hall of records that's out there somewhere. But if that was destroyed, then the one that's in the Vatican was that third hall of records that nobody has any idea where it may have been.
I'd probably go with the second one you said. They moved it out, and then,
because then nobody's looking for it. That's a smart way of doing it. If it's expected that the entire thing was destroyed, you know, maybe a couple books were saved, but they wouldn't expect every single piece of it.
No. I mean, it's like they say, was it when they were these officials, the government say you want to hide something, it's usually hidden in plain sight. You know, it's like I know a few people who belong to the Flat Earth Society, you know, and governments and officials, they'll talk about the Flat Earth Society. They're happy to talk about it, because if they don't, then that's when people say, what are you hiding then? So they will talk about the Flat Earth and their opinions and things like that, but they won't not talk about it, because that just stirs people up even more. The old conspiracy starts to stir a bit more. Why can't I have a look at that? Why are you, not let me talk about that? That's think about when you're being a conspiracy theorist, is you always think about who's going to benefit from this, who's benefiting and who's going to make something out of this. And, but yeah,
you got to follow the money more often. That's usually what it is.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
Fair enough. I did an episode on Marx and Explained World about the Van Dorn slaughter. What it was a book that came out in the early 1990s, I think. And it was all about the American, let me get this right. Sorry. The American army in World War One, where the black troops were kept separated from the white troops, and it was very, very strict segregation. Now, the conspiracy theory is that have you heard of the Valentine's Day Massacre?
Yeah.
And of course, that was all started by a black cop who shooting a black man under military, and then the whole thing just got completely out of hand. Now, the conspiracy is, in order to quash the rebellion, they stood all the black soldiers up, about 3,000 of them, and just shot them all, just like that, and then buried them all. That's a conspiracy. But in real life, that didn't happen. The official report is there was, obviously, the Valentine's Day massacre, but there was also only a couple of people got hurt, and the men, everybody got shot. I just got all sent off from different camps around the world to carry on fighting World War One. However, this is the interesting part. When people have actually gone to have a look at the records of Camp Van Dorn, 800 people, black men, are missing.
800?
800. 800 men are actually missing. The reports, if you like, they're just down as missing. 800 is a hell of a lot.
Yeah, especially there was a massacre and they actually cleaned everything up. They should have been able to like tag and identify everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, 800.
Unless it was a racial thing at the time that they just didn't care to take the time to try to
Find out.
Yeah, find out. They just kind of said, all right, these are the African American people. Let's just.
Yeah. Could be. But I find that interesting. The fact that, I was all prepared to say it's probably just a theory. It's probably just a theory. Until I got to the end of the show, when the last few bits I wrote, and I suddenly saw it said 800 soldiers to this day from Camp Van Dorn, black soldiers, are missing.
Yeah,
so that sort of made me think, okay, all right. That's
probably the root of where it all honestly started in the first place, that people even really started diving into it and thinking that it may have been a conspiracy, because there always has to be some little piece of information off that starts the rabbit trail for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, the officials say that, I can't remember the guy who wrote, Carol Case, the guy who wrote the book. And of course, the officials say he started all this up because he wanted to sell his book. You know, he was trying to make a deal out of his book and trying to, you know, sell more copies. But that's why it stays a conspiracy, because we don't know one way or the other. So, for years.
And unfortunately, a lot of those things you'll never know, because more than likely it's hidden in some document that's not going to get disclosed until it gets to the point where nobody cares when the information comes out in the first place. Because the JFK stuff, they were going to release that in the US, and then people started caring, and then they're like, all right, let's push it back a bit more.
Yeah, fair enough. This, exactly the same thing happened over here when there was the big miners' strike back in the world. This is the 80s. And Margaret Thatcher was the prime minister at the time, wouldn't give in to the miners. I was never a Thatcherite, but I did admire her. She, you know, she was a sort of woman who really did stand her ground, and nothing would make her show move. And all the records from that period were going to be released probably 10 years ago. But someone somewhere decided, no, let's keep them locked up for another 25 years. And so, of course, everyone's going, hold on, why?
Then in 25 years, they're going to push it back another 25 years.
So by the time it gets released, the generations before and I will have gone, nobody can be sued. So it'll just...
That's what they're hoping for.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
So one thing I definitely got to dive into before we run out of time too, because I always love asking this of guests that are from not the United States, and I guess partially sometimes the United States too, depending on the area, but I always like to dive into local folklore. It's one of my absolute favorite things to dive into. So I like getting some of those like localized things that are maybe even local legends that not too many people know outside of the area. So I know you're living over in the UK, like you mentioned. I don't know exactly what the area is, but I know you guys have obviously like a history buried on history buried on history. So I'm sure that there's thousands of local legends and folklore and stuff that you guys probably have in your area. But is there any that happened to have stuck out to you that you've happened to pick up, or any that you remember from the area you lived in as a kid or anything?
Local legends. Are you talking cryptids or anything, or just
cryptids, paranormal, UFOs, and just any local interesting legends, of course.
Okay. Well, I'd say the nearest to me is I'm sort of to the west of London, between London and Reading. So I'm probably smack bang in the middle. But to the east, there's what they call the Monster of Kent, who has been seen as like a Bigfoot or Sasquatch, who has been seen wandering around certain areas in the area of Kent, which is right down the southern end of southern east of England. And various people have seen this big monster go around. In fact, one young man got attacked by him. That's the one that probably sticks out straight away. The other one is in Wales, where is the Todd Morton UFO sightings, which is a really fascinating case. And they started off right over sort of West Wales, the coastline in West Wales, where a group of school children saw a UFO land in the field next to them. And they were all asked to draw pictures of what they'd seen in exam conditions by the teacher. Because I think one of the teachers also saw this UFO land as well. But it wasn't just the school. There's a... I can't remember her name now, a journalist did some more research. It was found that the same shape UFO had been seen all the way along the south coast of Wales by different people who didn't know each other. And when she went to the Book of Records or the Hall of Records over in London, where everything had been released about regarding UFOs, there was a great big file on there where the MOD had written about this UFO and all the witness statements and everything. And that's really a fascinating case. One of the intriguing things about that to me was the aliens themselves were probably about 8 foot tall. Really, I'm saying that is because one poor woman, this was, when was this? 79, 80, that sort of era. She was upstairs in cleaning the house or something one evening, clean the house or doing something upstairs. And she looked out in one of the bedroom windows, and in front of the window was this face just looking at her. Of course, petrified, frightened the life out. And as she ran downstairs to tell her kids and try and get them all together, she could see the rest of the shape of the alien, you know, through the front window downstairs. She could see like his arm, if you like, and his leg, you know. So he must have been about 8 foot tall in order to look in the top window. That's one of the fascinating cases. The other one that really is interesting one is the Rendlesham Forest UFO, and they call that our Roswell.
Yep, I was going to say I've heard about that one a couple of times. It's fascinating. Yeah,
that is an amazing case. I mean, that was done. That happened over three nights. You know, different soldiers witnessed different things over three nights, and maybe three of the soldiers actually saw the craft land in the middle of the forest. And of course he made notes on his notebook and whatever, what these symbols were, and he actually touched it. And I believe I think he's still alive, Holt, I think his name is, and he's got some sort of cancer. And
that seems to be a common motif with a lot of these things. People get like radiation burn, or they get like some type of sickness from being too close to these crafts.
And of course, he can't get insurance because the Air Force won't release the documents of what happened to him that night. So there's no way they can find out, because he said, "I got it from an alien spacecraft." Of course, the insurance company got bought, you know. And because the Air Force won't release any documents, unfortunately, the poor guy is still suffering. I think I've got that right. It's open for people to look, but I believe one of them is actually suffering at the moment. Those are the ones that immediately come to mind. I'm sure there's others. I know there's a few in Wales.
There was one that I found always particularly fascinating that I covered a few times on Bizarre Encounters, but like Sam the Sandown Clown, and the fact that it was like made out of wood instead of like metal and stuff. I don't know if you're familiar with that story, but
no, go on.
So pretty much like the I don't remember exactly where the location was, but it was obviously over in England somewhere. But essentially these kids saw this hut, metal like hut looking thing, that was like down by one of like the creek or something like that. And they came down to go and check it out. And this like wooden clown guy came out of it and said something to him. And they just came out as like weird noises. And the kids went to run, and he ended up grabbing this box, and he started talking into the box. And then it started translating to like English and stuff. And he started having like a conversation with these kids and stuff. And they ended up coming into his little like hut thing. And he was like eating food with them, but he was doing like weird things where he like put it in his ear and they'd watch it like roll past the back of his eye and like fall out of his mouth and stuff. And the kids ended up leaving and stuff. And the kids went and they told their parents about it and everything. They went back and they said that the hut shack UFO, whatever it was, wasn't there anymore. And then from what I was following with it, at least the dad ended up also having some type of weird UFO sighting. Either it was right before or right after. And a lot of people believe that it's all kind of linked in, which is where people think of it as more of like an extraterrestrial. But I always found like the wood aspect part of it weird. But the only really like thing that I could possibly think of is what kind of materials on Earth. It's of course going to be wood. So maybe something may have happened to this creature's suit, or if it had like some type of like space suit or something, and that was the closest material it was possibly able to make something out of. But I don't know. Like, I'm sure that there exist trees on other planets and stuff, or in other realities, whatever way you want to kind of take in the whole UFO phenomenon. But just the fact that it was made out of wood is like a very standalone thing to me. And the recorder box thing that he came out and like talked through was also really weird, because usually you hear about like the mind speak with aliens. You don't hear about like a physical tool they use to talk to something.
Yeah. Well, what's it called again?
Sam the Sandown Clown.
I'm just writing it down. I've not heard that one.
Yeah, that's like honestly, as far as most of like the weird stories go for like the UK, like that's probably like the biggest like cryptid kind of one that a lot of people talk about. But it was like talked about for a little while, and it's kind of like died out for a bit. But I don't know, I always found it fascinating just because of like the wood part of it. Like, it's just very like a standalone case. I haven't found anything else that even sounds like remotely close to that case. And just like the kids describing it and everything, like, it just didn't seem like the dynamics of like a person in like a wooden suit. Cause of course that's the first thing you're going to jump to, but even just like him being able to put something in the ear, have it like come through the mouth. And why would he have this like little random metallic hut like down by like a creek and stuff, and then it'd be gone later? Like, either one, it was some type of dimension slip. Maybe it was something that was maybe more Fae-like possibly, but still fascinating all the same.
Yeah, I'm going to have a look. Yeah, thanks for that. I'm going to have a look at that. Yeah.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out Cryptoteology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid-related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds, but when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over. So don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there, you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Sorry, no, I'm about to do a show probably for a few weeks yet. I've been doing some research on it on a policeman called Alan Godfrey. And he's involved in two really strange cases. I mean, he had to retire because he was getting a lot of flack for his beliefs. And the first one is like a murder mystery, if you like, where this guy, Sigmund Madansky or something. Anyway, he's a Polish guy. And he went to work one day and then vanished, just disappeared. So he got reported as a missing person. And then one day, it says he must have been Wales because it was a coal, mine. One day, these guys went into work, unlocked the bolts, and then in front of them, a big pile of coal, probably about 10 feet high, was a body. So, of course, they called out to the police, and it was this Alan Godfrey, I think his name. He came in, and he climbed up to the top of the coal, and on there was this missing guy, this Sigmund. But what was strange was it was like someone had undressed him and then put his clothes back on, but not very well. Like his trousers would be on backwards or back to front, or his shirt would be tucked inside out.
That's the usual UFO thing with abductions. You hear about that a lot, that people have like their clothes spun backwards and stuff.
Exactly. Because he also had all his hair like not cut, like somebody had gone very quickly with a razor, you know, and it was all spiky and all over the place. And he was covered in some sort of goo. Yeah. He was dead, unfortunately, but they couldn't work out how he died. Also, how the hell did he get on top of that 10-foot pile of coal? Who on earth would go up there and put on a 10-foot? Because nobody could get in the building over the weekend. It was only one person with the key, and that was the manager. And also, the coal itself had not been disturbed. You know, it was a nice pile, and there wasn't like the lumps of it on the floor where somebody had walked on it. And the Polish guy himself had no coal marks on him.
They were like, oops, we killed this one on accident. We got to dump him somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. But what was interesting, now a lot of people tend to put his what happened to this copper into two sections. That is like the mystery part, and it's an unsolved crime because nobody knows how it happened to him. 6 months later, the PC, the copper again, he was doing in his panda car, doing some general driving around, making sure everything's okay. And he suddenly, in front of him, on this country road, was what he described looked like a double-decker bus side-on, but about 2 or 3 feet in the air. Because it was dark, he could just see the lights going across the top and the lower deck, and he thought it was a double-decker bus. And he got closer to it, and he knew it just didn't seem right. You know, it had a few flashing lights on it and things like that. So he got out of his car, and he got his notebook, and he started sketching this thing in front of him. And then all of a sudden, in a flash, he was in his car driving down the road. And he suddenly sort of thought, whoa, what's going on? He's put his brakes on quickly, and he said, what on earth? And he looked back, and whatever it was had gone. So he actually gone past what he saw in front of him. Yeah, he got back to the police station, and he was a bit shaken up.
It's like a time slip.
Yeah. Well, he got in there, and he sort of said, look, I've just seen this. And then, of course, it was the late 70s, early 80s, and he wasn't taken very seriously. But he said, but this is what I saw in the road. Well, anyway, he went in to get changed to go home, took his uniform off, and he looked at the clock on the wall, and it said 9 o'clock. He finishes at 6. And he thought, it must be wrong, you know, because he knew he had to come back to work for 6 o'clock to get dressed to go home. And he asked somebody for the time. He said, oh, it's 9 o'clock. So he lost 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this guy, he's got two weirdnesses, strange things that happened to him, you know, and I've decided to try and put them both into a show to try and make it about him rather than the things that happened to him. Because it's quite interesting. He did go, I believe he did have some regression therapy or hypnosis to find out what happened to him. But I won't tell you anymore because you'll have to listen to my show to find out.
Of course. I'm definitely going to be listening to that episode because you got me fascinated on it. I'm almost wondering if there's like a link that maybe he got too close to something on the first case, so they had to like mind wipe him something, and that's what happened to him for the second experience. That's like how I would kind of connect it. If you get into the UFO aspect of it, of course.
Yeah, of course. That's how I saw it as well, but I haven't read the whole thing yet, but it was interesting enough for me to go, yeah, I'm going to do a show on this, you know. So that's the missing time and things like that. But hey, we live in a strange world.
Hey, I'm going to be doing this a little bit backwards because I usually do words of wisdom first and then all the links and everything. But just because you were talking about that episode, of course, you got to tell everybody where to come and check out your podcast. And then actually, maybe we can split it up and then we can do all of your medium links at the end. But let everybody know where they can find your podcast. So they can go and check out that episode.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, that episode won't come out till about September, I think, because I've got quite a few partly written at the moment. Well, every Monday evening here, afternoon, where you are, my podcast comes out, and it comes out on pretty much all the platforms, podcast platforms like Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Prime, Google Podcasts, and various others. The only one I haven't got it on yet is iTunes, simply because my laptop is so crap. Every time I try and download the app, it crashes, so I need to sort that out. And it's also available on YouTube as well. You'll find, just type in Mark's Unexplained World, it'll come up. I tend to also put the links all over social media. I've got a Facebook group called Mark's Unexplained World, which is full of weird and wonderful things. Anything I can find that's out of the ordinary, I post links on that for people to read, enjoy, and comment. I try to answer the comments when I can. So that's where you'll find Mark's Unexplained World. Mark the Medium is I do use that page, but I tend to do a lot of my medium stuff is more private work. So if I do put stuff on my Medium page, it's more usually stuff if I've done like ghost tour or something like that, and that's if somebody's filmed me doing it, then I will I put stuff on there. I've also got I'm on Instagram as well. Instagram is really just pictures and things like that of books I've got, and various ornaments and nature pictures and things like that on there. I'm also on TikTok, and I'm everywhere. LinkedIn, so that's so that, but the main place to go is Mark's Unexplained World, because that's where the link to the podcasts are at the moment. I'm on episode 104 at the moment, so I'll be going exactly 2 years, so
Well, perfect. I'll make sure I include all the links down in the show description so everybody can find it quick and easy. And since we're doing this a little bit backwards, of course, I got to ask, if there was any words of wisdom that you could bestow on the listeners, what might it be?
Well, somebody once said to me about summoning demons and things like that. Now, I can't remember the exact number of days, but they said to me, if you wanted to summon up a demon, it would take you 22 days. And it means doing the same ritual every day. If you ever get 22 days, he said he only knew one person that did this. And after 7 days of doing the same ritual every day, he got fed up with it and stopped doing it. But he said to me, Mark, if you ever feel like doing summoning up a demon by doing this ritual for 22 days, don't.
That's pretty good words of advice. Just don't.
Just don't. No. I've seen some things that have happened to people because they mucked around with stuff they just don't understand, or they think they understand.
Hey, if you call them here, they're going to take a doggy bag back with them, and chances are there's a good chance it might be you. I mean,
So I think that's probably, Sorry, very quickly. I know you're running out of time. I did a show a while back with a young lady called on spectrophilia, which is people who like to have sex with ghosts and spirits and things like that. And I said to, I asked her a question. I said, so if somebody's practicing spectrophilia, how do they stop? And she said, burn everything and start a new life.
Yeah, once you get them that close and bonded to you, they ain't going nowhere. Like, you think crazy boyfriends are one thing when they're alive, imagine when they're dead.
I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, I did exactly as you did. I did laugh as well, because the way she just said it, burn everything, start a new life.
Your clothes, everything, they're still going to follow you.
Yes. All good fun.
Well, I appreciate you making the time to come on today. Man, it's been a lot of fun, and I definitely have to have you come back on, because I just love listening to you tell stories and share your experiences. Just fascinating to listen to. So,
and I thank you so much for the opportunity as well. And please don't be a stranger. You know, just don't be a stranger.
Of course, you know I'll definitely make sure we keep a line of contact open.
Do so. You know, brilliant. Okay, well, thanks ever so much, and I hope I've done your show some justice, and I hope your listeners will be encouraged to listen to you again.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They'll definitely enjoy this episode, knowing how I usually run the show, keeping that open conversation. It was a really fun conversation. Like I said, we covered a lot of ground, so I think they'll enjoy it.
Yeah, good. Hope so, yeah.
If anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, having me as a guest on your show, sponsoring the show, or getting a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can get a hold of me through email, which is increaseofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media, Instagram or Facebook. Instagram is the one that I am the most active on, of course. Or you guys can get a hold of me through the submission forms, which are available on the link tree. And if anybody is interested in podcast or audiobook production services, you guys can shoot me a message through Open Minds Media. The link tree for that is available down in the show description also. And every single thing that I mentioned throughout the entire show is available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
Reality isn't what it seems. Abductees taking aboard a craft with a tractor beam. Is life a simulation or an astral dream? Aliens travel through black holes of different galaxies. Bigfoot stalking campers as the Wendigo walks through the woods with sharpened antlers. Using Ouija boards to talk to the dead like a necromancer. There's so many questions and not enough answers. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Reality. So if you're interested by mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Reality.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.